It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 or on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Hope all is well. You're listening to Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. And still all quiet on the Western front for the Giants, but quite frankly, it can't last much longer. Because if the Giants want to do anything before free agency starts, they better get working on it, because right now, free agency begins in 5 days. That's when you start negotiating with other teams' players. And 2 days after that, on March 11th, that's when you can begin negotiating with players and signing them. That's when you can start signing players. So it's coming. And stuff's going to have to start happening pretty soon. For our sakes, I wish it would have started happening already. Now I'll stop by Jerry's office, see if we can expedite some situations here and get some news that we can actually talk about instead of just speculating. But that's all we have right now, and it would seem that at least for the moment that the one priority the Giants have, and NJ.com had it, is John Beeson. And Jerry Reese and Mr. Beeson have been locked in contract negotiations, and the unique part of this is that Beeson does not have an agent, so they're doing this one-on-one. And as Paul Dottino and I talked about yesterday on the show, it's going to be very interesting as to how they structure this contract, because while John Beeson played well for the Giants last year, though maybe not quite as well as some people might think, especially with his coverage issues, he's had a lot of injury problems in the past, ACL, Achilles, microfracture. Before last season, he had played something like 6 or 8 games in 3 seasons, which obviously is not good. So the Giants are going to want to try to protect themselves from another potential future injury. And John Beeson is going to try to get as much guaranteed money as he can get so he can cash in on his good season with the Giants last year. So I think there's a middle ground to be found where you give him a 4-year deal. The Giants will have an easy out to get out of that deal after 2 years. But if Beeson plays well, the contract would make sense to play out the length of the contract. And both sides would be happy with it. So I think that's probably the way to go. And I think it can get done. Now, John Beeson not having an agent, that complicates things. You never know how John Beeson's going to negotiate for himself. It could make things easier. It could make things more difficult. There's really no way to tell. But hopefully the Giants can get that done before free agency so they at least have a basis of which to work with at the linebacker position. And that linebacker, assuming Beeson does get brought back, you have Beeson in the middle, you have the combination of Jaquan Williams and Spencer Payne Singer on one side, and they'll be fine. They'll get the job done. Unlike Paul Dottino, who I was with yesterday, this is year 4 for Jaquan Williams. I'm not expecting some kind of breakout year where he's a Pro Bowl caliber player. Can he get better? Sure. But I think the ship has sailed, the one with the sign that says Jaquan Williams could be a future All-Pro weak side linebacker. He has his strengths. They're in coverage. He's never going to be great against the run. Yeah, he put a little bit better end of last year, but I think he's good enough to start. You can put him in nickel when he covers tight ends, and I think you'll be okay. Then you got to figure out what you want to do with the Sam. You got to find someone over there who can set the edge, play well against the run, be more physical than Jaquan Williams, help out John Beeson in the run game. Now, this player also, whoever plays Sam, is probably not going to play a whole lot next year. If they play that 3 safety package, and rather than, you know, taking a corner out to take a linebacker out, that same linebacker could be off the field an awful lot. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. This, you know, these days in the NFL, with a lot of teams going with, you know, two tight ends, two wide outs, or three wide receivers, one tight end, you're going to need your nickel personnel anyway, which means that strong side linebacker is off the field. So he's probably only going to play 20 to 25 plays a game, and a lot of those coming in short yardage, things of that nature. First downs, likely running situations, red zone, things like that. So I wouldn't go nuts in trying to find a strong side linebacker. And I think, unfortunately for the Giants, they have higher priorities. I think once you bring back Beeson, you figure out Sam, whether it's in the draft, you know, in a mid-round, or, you know, you take a free agent that's been on the street for a while and hasn't been signed in that second or third wave of free agents. And I think that's how you address that third linebacker spot. I don't think you can afford to use a high pick, whether it's in the first round or use a lot of money in free agency, on a third linebacker. Frankly, he's just not on the field enough. And I guess theoretically you could move Jaquan to the strong side and then, you know, draft a C.J. Mosley in the first round, put him at will. But I'm not sure if you have enough size then. I'm not sure if Jaquan can, you know, do what needs to be done from a Sam linebacker. So I think it's interesting to see what the Giants do. Number one is bring back Beeson. And according to reports that came out yesterday, they're working on it. I don't know how close they are, but they'll try to get something done before the discussion period begins on March 9th and the signing period begins on March 11th. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter to chime in there. Let's go to the phones and say what's up to AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's up, pal?
What's up, John? Good morning. I got two questions for you.
Yeah, what do you got?
The Giants need to sign John Beeson because the defense got better last season with the signing for Carolina.
Yeah, Beeson was part of it. Also a big part of it was Will Hill coming back from that suspension. But I agree, it is a guy I think the Giants would be well-suited to bring back.
What happened to his agent?
Well, I'm sorry, say that again?
What happened to John Beeson's agent?
John Beeson does not have an agent. He's negotiating this on his own.
Okay, I got one more question before I go. Do you hear any news about Andre Brown? Because I ain't heard nothing from him, like for the Giants, anything.
I think Andre Brown's going to go out there and test the free agent market. I think the Giants will let him test the free agent market. And if in 2 months he's still sitting there without a job and the Giants can bring him in on a very small veterans contract, I think they'd consider it. But I don't think that's a guy the Giants would consider signing before the free agent period started.
Okay, I'm going to get out the final one. It's nice. I was talking with you.
All right, AJ, thanks for the call, bud. And, you know, I'm not sure if Beeson was ever asked why he's decided to forego having representation and doing it himself. Maybe he didn't like the fact how his agent renegotiated his Carolina deal after he signed that big contract there. Maybe, frankly, just don't want to pay commissions anymore on new deals. You know, agents don't mess around. I mean, the NFL, they take, what, probably like 10 to 12%, something like that? I mean, you get a contract with, you know, let's say $10 million guaranteed, you know, you're writing a check for $1 million for somebody. I don't like the sound of that. Kind of sucks. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Anthony in Phoenix. Anthony, what's up, pal?
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, Anthony. What's going on?
An excellent show yesterday with Paul Dottino. I really enjoyed it. I like one of the points that he made about Beeson's contract, about giving him low incentives that are attainable.
Right.
I really like that. That I've never heard that before. That's very good. Because then Beeson can realize, you know, I can get there easily.
Right, and I think what you do, Anthony, you combine some of those incentives, but at the same time, I do think you have to give him a certain amount of guaranteed upfront money to motivate him to sign a contract like that. So I think what you do, a combination. You give him the bonus upfront to motivate him to sign it, but then later on in the contract, you have protections for the Giants in case he does run into some of these serious injuries he has in his prior years in the league.
Correct. Now, the other thing, are you aware if Alex Mack has received the franchise tag from Cleveland?
I understand it's not the franchise tag, it's the transition tag. So how the transition tag works, and I guess I could have led this in the monologue a little bit, because that obviously is bad news for Giant fans who wanted to really go after Alex Mack. Basically, what the transition tag means is that the Browns have a couple days. I'm not sure. It may even be a week. It's somewhere from 3 days to a week. After Alex Mack signs an offer sheet from another team, the Browns have the right to match that contract, and Alex Mack has to take that match. He can't say, no, I don't want to re-sign with Cleveland. He has to go back there if Cleveland matches that contract.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well, it could be worse. They could have put the true franchise tag on him, in which case the Giants would lose 2 number 1 draft picks to sign him. So it could be worse, but it's still not good.
Right. In that case, maybe we better be thinking about Schwartz a little bit more. But I also like what you mentioned yesterday, you and Paulie, about Paulie kind of changed my mind about Lewan. If Martin's available, I tend to agree, because I'm old school with George Young, too. And I like that mobility, the options of having him inside or outside. This way you can plug holes. He really changed my mind there. If Martin's available, I was thinking high on Lewan like everyone else. But if Martin's available, it'd be a lot easier to switch him back and forth with Pugh if you need to, you know, in an emergency or whatever, illness, injury, something like that. Or you have that mobility, you have that option with Martin, don't you think?
Yeah, it's good, but at the same time, you know, Lewan, you know, I'm not sure that he's going to be. But what if your scouts tell you, you know, we think Zach Martin will make, over the course of his career, he'll make 2 to 3 Pro Bowls. He'll be a very solid player. But for Lewan, they tell you, well, his upside is he'll make 7 or 8 Pro Bowls, and he could be one of the top tackles in the league for a decade. Is that flexibility worth taking a player that maybe isn't quite as physically gifted? Now, I'm not sure that's the case. Maybe that's not how it lines up in the Giants scouts' views. I don't know that. But I think it is something to consider how valuable that multi-positional flexibility is to you, and how much raw talent are you willing to sacrifice to get that flexibility.
Yeah, and maybe Martin might go a little later in the draft anyway, and you might be able to trade back to get another pick somewhere.
Well, right, that was my point. I do not pick Martin at 12. I don't think he's a good enough athlete with a big enough upside to select at number 12. To me, if you're going to pick Zach Martin, you can trade down, I would say, into the low teens, you know, 15, 16, 17, maybe pick him an extra third or fourth rounder, and you should be able to get him there.
Excellent. And then we can get Nicholas in the second round.
If Troy Nicholas is there in the second round, I think it's somebody the Giants will certainly look at. He comes from a program that does ask their tight ends to block. He's 270 pounds. I think that's certainly an option if you decide to go not with Eric Ebron in the first round of the draft.
Right. And with Stevie Brown, everybody feels he's going to come back for like a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we try to get him with a second-year option, team option?
No, because he doesn't want it. He just wants to sign a one-year deal. So if he has a year like he had 2 seasons ago off those interceptions, he can cash in free agency next year.
Yeah, but if you give him an option, a team option with a few million, that might keep him, you know, he might not want to go right away.
Well, Stevie Brown would want a player option. He wouldn't want a team option. Because if it's a team option, all the leverage lands with the Giants. If the Giants, let's say Stevie Brown signs a 1 year, $1.5 million contract with a $2.5 million option, team option for year number 2. What happens if Stevie Brown has a fantastic year? And if he goes to free agency, he's going to get, you know, a 4-year, $20 million contract. Then he's kicking himself for that team option, but he's offered no protection. So if he has a crappy year, then all of a sudden the Giants aren't going to activate the option, and he's sitting there in free agency coming off a bad year, and he's going to have to settle for a veteran's minimum type of deal. So a team option is really the worst possible scenario for a player to be put into.
Okay, thanks, John. Nice show.
Hey, Anthony, no problem. Thanks for calling in, bud. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's going on?
Hi, I got nothing. I got a question for you. I think the Giants will look to sign Devin Hester from the Bears. He's one of the free agent return specialists.
You know, Tim, I don't like Devin Hester as much as I like some of the other guys. I think a Jacoby Jones is a better fit. I think he has more left in the tank than a Devin Hester, and frankly, he can probably give you a little bit more as a wide receiver. I like Ted Ginn Jr. a lot more than I like Devin Hester. You know, Devin Hester had the concussion issues. He had some knee problems. I don't think he's explosive as he used to be. It's the same reason I don't want Josh Cribbs last offseason. Same reason. Those return guys, to me, kind of lose their giddy-up quickly. And I feel like Hester and Cribbs have. I don't feel like Ted Ginn has lost any giddy-up. To me, he's still really fast, and he can still break it at any moment. You know, McCluster's another guy. You know, he's more of a slot receiver, so I don't think he's quite as good of a fit. But there are guys out there that fit that criteria. And I believe the Giants should look at one of those players to see if they could help him this upcoming season. 201-939-4513. Let's stick on the phones and say what's up to Ryan in Missouri. Ryan, what's up, pal?
What's up, man? Hey, I was wondering if you think McAdoo's going to bring back the trickery, the reverses, bootlegs, flea flickers, you know, spice up the offense because it's been kind of dull past couple of years,
yeah,
I think.
Ryan, I have some bad news for you. It wasn't Kevin Gilbride that didn't want to run any of those plays. He actually had him in his playbook, and when he was in Houston, he ran some trick stuff. Tom Coughlin is not a trick play guy. So might you see, you know, more misdirection, more play action, more, you know, things like that? Sure. But unless Tom Coughlin has really decided to change his philosophy, I still don't think you're going to see a lot of end-arounds, reverses, flea flickers, throwbacks, and things of that nature.
All right, I was just curious about that because, you know, it seems to me like I know the plays that are coming on most when it was just very blah and dull to me.
No, Ryan, I hear you. And frankly, I don't think a trick play now or then to keep the opponent guessing is a bad thing. And when I sit up there and I talk to some of the guys in the scouting department, they'll tell you, look, when teams run plays like that, whether it's, you know, surprise onside kicks, end-around passes, that's stuff that you practice against and you have to work on. So I think it would be a good thing if the Giants forced other teams to prepare for things like that, and it could very well open up other things in their offense.
I hear you. All right, well, thanks, man.
Hey, I'm with you, Ryan. No problem. Thanks for the call, bud. 201-939-4513. Unfortunately, guys, I know a lot of people really like those trick plays and everything. I'm not sure if I see it happening. It's just not Tom Coughlin's way. He's not a guy that embraces those types of risks, even with the potential benefit. And I get part of it. Do you want to trust Reuben Randall to, you know, make a decision as to whether or not he should throw a ball away or try to throw it down the field for a touchdown on an end-around? Is that really what you want to do? I mean, you've seen Gerald Jernigan try to catch kickoffs and punts. Do you want him with the ball, you know, dropping back on a reverse? You know, you don't even run back on the roster. You're running flea flickers. But like I said a second ago, I don't think it would hurt if the Giants whip something like that every few games, 3-4 games, and saw what happens. See what happens. I'm trying to remember. Salomon, help me out here. Last time Giants ran a surprise onside kick. I don't think they've run one since I've been here. They've run design ones. I don't think they've run one on purpose. Hit me up on Twitter. Everybody remembers the last time the Giants ran a surprise onside kick. They ran a couple of trick plays, actually, in the preseason. The biggest trick play last year, I guess, was the drill jerking an end-around. And that's not really an end-around's not a trick play. I mean, it's just a handoff to a wide receiver. And by the way, let me clarify something for people out there. And this is a pet peeve of mine. And people in the league and announcers for the league, play-by-play guys, analysts, make this mistake all the time. There's a difference between an end-around and a reverse. They are not interchangeable expressions. An end-around is when the wide receiver comes behind the quarterback, gets the handoff, and goes. That's an end-around. Just listen to the verbiage. You start the end, and you come around. End-around. A reverse is something different. Let me ask you something. Why do you think they call it a reverse? Do you think it's because the play starts in one direction and goes in the same direction? No. That's why an end-around is not a reverse. A reverse is a play in which you hand it off to one player. It could be a wide receiver. It could be a running back. Either one. They run towards the sideline on one side of the field. Then, here's where it gets tricky. The other receiver, or even a tight end. It could be anybody. Comes running back from the other from the same direction you're running towards. You flip it to them, and then they run towards the opposite end of the field. They reverse the direction of the football. That's why it's called the reverse. So, end the round, one handoff wide receiver runs around the edge. Reverse, there are two handoffs. Quarterback to player one, then player one to player two. That's a reverse. And by the way, I know nobody calling into this show has made that mistake. But that's something you constantly hear on NFL broadcasts where these announcers do not understand the difference between an end around and a reverse. It's one of those things that just annoys the crap out of me. And I've had about 5 minutes to blow off some steam. By the way, speaking of blowing off steam, it's to the point now, I played basketball last night, didn't get home until like 11:30. Had the Knick game on DVR, didn't even bother. Didn't waste my time with it. As someone tweeted to me last night when I asked if it was worth it, they go, did you do anything bad and you deserve punishment? If so, then you should watch it. That's probably one of the reasons I'm so anxious to actually have something happen in free agency. I'm just tired of watching and thinking about the Knicks. I mean, geez. What's the point of watching anymore? It's the same thing every game. Carmelo Anthony shoots well. No one plays any defense. The guards couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. I'm a better shooter than the Knicks guards. And they lose by 15 points. It's hard to take. Let's get some Giant news, please. Something. Give me something to grasp onto here in March. At least we got the tournament starting in 2 weeks. That'll give me some decent basketball to watch. Then the NBA playoffs, which is always fun. But, boy, give me something. 201-939-4513. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's going on, pal?
What's going on with you, John?
Nothing much, bro. What happened with you?
Everything's going well. Anthony stole one of my questions that I was going to ask earlier, but I was asking about Alex Mack with the transition tech. What does that mean? But we answered it earlier. So I was going on to the we think we restructure Andrell and Chris Knee's contract before the beginning of free agency?
I mean, Chris Knee, you have to. I mean, there's no reason to leave his $11.5 million cap hit on the books. I don't understand what's taking so long. He said he's willing to talk about a restructure. Get his base salary down to $1 million, and you save about $6 million on the cap. I don't understand what the hell's taking so long, to be quite honest with you. But yeah, I would expect Snead to get done before free agency starts, or you know, at the very least by like March 9th, something like that. In terms of the other player you mentioned, Ancho Roll, my feeling, and again, this is just a feeling, is that they'll wait a little bit to do that. I think it'll still get done in this offseason period. And if they see somebody they want to sign, they'll go to Roll, get that extension done, and then use that money to sign a specific target. But I haven't seen with either Roll or Eli, for that matter, the motivation and the real anxiousness to get that done very, very quickly.
Two more questions for you, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
John Beeson, you think he'll be done before free agency? I heard that Giants and him is in serious talks right now and everything. You think the contract be done before free agency begin, or are you going to hit the market? I don't know if someone asked already or not.
I covered off the top of the show. I believe his contract will get done before free agency starts, but I think it's going to go right up against it. And the reason I say that, Bash, is that it's complicated because there are two parts of this contract you got to worry about. One, Beeson has to get a certain amount of guaranteed money in order to make it worth his while to sign the contract. But at the same time, let's say you sign a four-year deal. The Giants would want to give themselves an out after two seasons where it wouldn't hurt them salary cap-wise if Beeson has one of those injuries that have plagued his whole career where they want to cut bait after 2 years. So I think if you can figure out a way to balance those two things and you do that by putting like incentives into the last couple years of the deal, things like that, I think they'll be able to figure out a way to get something done.
All right, last question. You know Jerry Reese goes with a lot of one-year contracts. Besides going with the O-line, you think it would be any multi-year contract with any other position besides the O-line?
I think multi-year?
Or be a lot of one-year contracts?
That's a good question.
Free agency.
I think you will sign a multi-year free agent at running back. I think you'll sign somebody for at least 3 seasons at the running back position. So I'd say yes. I'd say you get one at offensive line for multiple years. You get one at running back. And if they go out in free agency and sign a tight end they like, and I'm not convinced they will, I think that could be a position they go after in the draft. But if they find a guy they believe will be their starter this year in free agency, I could see them signing a tight end for more than one season.
Yeah, you know, the past 3 years, he was signed a one-year contract for tight end, so this year would be a difference. And as I think Marcellus Bennett, we should have had a multi-year contract besides the one-year Bennett. One year deal with Bennett, but you think this year would be a multi-year contract with a tight end this year, John?
If they find the player that they believe can be a starter for a couple of years. Now, I'm not sure that guy's in free agency. Maybe that guy's not there. I don't know how the pro personnel department with Kenny Sternfeld and Matt Schauger and those guys have ranked those players at the tight end spot. But I think that they've given up, and how can you blame after the last 2 seasons, last year rather, and just, you know, signing one guy to one-year stopgaps. Get a guy in here that can be a tight end for a few years, that can build some chemistry with Eli, can be a two-way player. But I think, personally, there's a better chance of getting somebody like that in the draft, and I think that's where the Giants are going to find their tight end.
No, I appreciate it, John.
Thanks, man. And I think, too, if you go out there and, you know, if you want to sign a wide receiver that's a middle-of-the-road wide receiver like a James Jones, someone like that, or Ted Ginn, I think that could be a 2 or 3 year deal to a little money. I don't see why not. I don't think you have to limit yourself to a 1 year deal with those guys. And I want to touch briefly on the Alex Mack situation. Anthony and Phoenix brought that up earlier, and I should have led with that today because we've talked about Alex Mack on the show a ton. And look, we talked about how it's going to be very difficult to get him away from Cleveland. Now, I don't think anybody expected them to tag him, but now that he's tagged, I mean, you can basically put Alex Mack into the category of, well, it would have been nice, but it's not going to happen. Because for Cleveland not to match, you're really going to have to blow them out of the water. So I would cross Alex Mack off of your lists. Let me put it that way. That doesn't mean that there's no one else to get, whether it's the two guys from Kansas City, Asamoah, Jeff Schwartz, Dietrich Smith, De La Puente, the center from New Orleans. He's a good player. There's still guys out there that you can get that are interior linemen that can help your team. And you will get in a multi-year contracts. Back to the phones. Roldy is in Bayshore. Roldy, good morning.
Good morning, John. Just to let you know, before I just start with the Giants, the Knicks just basically played us, you know, with the 54 wins last year, you know, giving us a tease, you know, they basically played us. Even, you know, J.R. Smith, he got his contract. He said, you know, I'm in my contract here. I'm going to play my hardest so I can get the contract. Once I get the contract, the hell with everybody.
Now, and just one thing in fairness to J.R. Smith, and I don't want to get too deep into this.
I don't want to hear no fairness with J.R. Smith. He played us, John. He really did.
Look. He did have a very serious knee surgery in the offseason. Now, if you want to, you know, kill him for getting the knee surgery after he signs the contract, kill him for that. That's fair. But he has played a little bit better the last couple of months as the knee's gotten a little bit healthier. But, yeah, look, 54 wins last year. You figure at worst they win, what, 45 this
come
year?
Come on,
like
right.
That. It's
horrible.
It's a
mess. I've come to grips. You know what? I'm probably going to leave this earth without ever seeing a Knicks championship. I'm starting to come to grips with that.
I am still holding out hope. I am still holding out hope, Roldy.
I don't think I can at this point. But anyways, yesterday, Paul was making me go crazy yesterday. He was making me talk to myself, you know, going nuts. When he's talking about, you know, saying Justin Pugh, we should move him inside, draft offensive tackle in the first round, you know, and I spoke to him about that, and I kept on telling him, like, I don't think it's a good idea for a young guy like Justin Pugh that's played tackle all throughout his career so far, you know, came to a point where he started playing good towards the end of the season to try to move the guy inside. When in the draft, and I keep saying it all, over and over, in the draft, it's a lot of tackles in the first round when we need inside offensive linemen. We don't need tackles. We're good on the left side. Yes, BD had a bad season, but I'm sure he'll have a bounce back season. Pugh came on to his own with the right tackle position. Why would we want to move him inside when in the free agency, there's a lot of drafts, there's a lot of guards and centers in free agency. I don't know why is he keep thinking about moving Justin Pugh inside.
I don't understand why everyone.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. To me, Justin Pugh proved he could be a top right tackle in just his rookie year. So that tells me maybe in a couple years he might be able to be a left tackle if B doesn't work out on this contract.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Link.
And frankly, as good as you think these guys in the draft this year are going to be, you know, last year the tackles picked ahead of Pugh in the draft, whether it was Jokel, whether it was Fisher or Lane Johnson. None of those guys even had really good years last year. So why would you trust a rookie to go out there and play right tackle when you already have a guy on the right side that you know is going to do a good job? I don't get it either. To me, it's strange.
It's mind-boggling that I'm hearing Giants fans saying, you know, we should take a 12th pick in the first round. It's a valuable freaking pick. You need a playmaker. You need a difference maker. You right now, at this stage of Eli Manning's career, you don't need a rookie to draft a rookie in the first round. You know, put him in the line. And when you had Justin Pugh, you drafted him last year, having a second-year guy and a rookie on the offensive line that really does not know the NFL well. Now it's going to set Eli Manning back a little bit more. I mean, do you really want to take a chance on that when you have guards, when the main thing in the offensive line that we need is guards and centers? When you can get it in free agency, why would you want to go to the first round draft pick at 12, pick an offensive tackle?
Roley, here's the thing too: you can get the best guard in the draft probably with your second round pick,
and also third round too. The draft is very deep. I'm just trying to figure out if people are realizing that the draft is very deep. Your first round draft pick should be a difference maker. The Giants need somebody that's going to come into the league, automatically start, be a huge difference maker right off the bat. That's what we need. It's mind-boggling that I'm here, Giants fans. Oh, 12th pick, we need to get Martin. Oh, we need to get Luan. We need a difference maker. We need guards and centers. That's what we need. We don't need tackles. Right now, with us needing guards and centers, there's a lot of them that's available in free agency. And I just wanted to call in and just say that Paul really, you know, he really had me going crazy yesterday. I'm talking to myself like, what is this guy thinking about changing Justin Pugh inside? Why would you want to, you know, change this guy's psyche right now? He finished off the season strong on right tackle. Let the guy be. Let's get a guard and let's get a center in the free agency, not in the draft. Thank you, John. Thank you, Rodney.
I appreciate it. And look, I'm not saying, and you know, Nick Farmer brings up on Twitter, didn't we draft Pugh because of his versatility? I think he can handle guard. And Mike Farmer points out we are not good on the left side at guard or tackle. Beatty had a lot of issues last year. And look, I'm not arguing with either one of those points, guys. I'm not. And if you get to 12 and you think a franchise tackle is there that's better than anybody else on the board, and you think this guy is going to be the next, you know, Jonathan Ogden or Tony Boselli, sure, you pick him. I get that because that theoretically would be an upgrade over every offensive lineman on your team. But here's my point. Do I know that Taylor Lewan and Pugh at theoretically right tackle and right guard is better than Pugh and Yankee at right tackle and right guard? Do I know that's better? I don't know that's better. Especially not in years one or two. You're going to have a rookie at right tackle and a guy playing guard for the first time on the same side of the line. Assuming Pugh plays right guard, not left guard. I'm assuming right guard for now. We'll see what happens. Maybe he'll be on the left side. But how do I know Luan outside, Pugh inside is going to be better than, say, Pugh outside and Yankee inside or another, you know, one of the top guards in the draft? How do I know that? I don't. And if you don't know that, why are you going to use a first-round pick on one of the guys when you can just use a second-round pick? Value. You're looking for value. Now, if your argument's going to be, and this is probably your best one, that I think Will Beatty's through, he's done, he stinks, and I'm not going to trust him for the next 2 years. First of all, that would be awful considering all the money invested in him and how much it's going to kill your cap when you have to make him a June 1st cut next year. That's one. But that's your best argument, that you're picking the guy that's going to eventually replace Beattie. But I don't think the organization's willing to give up on him yet. He's not 30 years old yet. Just two seasons ago, he had an excellent year for an offensive tackle, one of the best in football. That's why I don't think you have to use a first-round pick on a tackle. Now, different story. If you get through free agency here and you don't wind up with a starting quality guard and you only wind up with, say, like a center, and right now your two starting guards heading into the season are Snead and Boss, then do you maybe pick a top offensive lineman in the first round? Yeah, I think about it. But I don't think the Giants are going to put themselves in that position. Nor should you, for that matter. That's what I'm saying. And if you don't know for sure that Luana tackle Pua guard is better than Pua tackle and some second-round guard playing inside, why do you use a first-round pick in that spot? Why? 201-939-4513. Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's going on?
Good morning there, John. Just speculating, I guess we have time. I did hear recently on ESPN, I just caught it, like Ron Jaworski and somebody else was saying they didn't think of too much of Johnny Manziel. And I was just wondering if that would ever, he'd ever drop to the Giants, you know, would you consider taking him there? Or what would you want for a draft pick from somebody else for him?
Well, let me put it this way. I think Johnny Manziel will be the minimum third pick, third quarterback taken in the draft. I think Bortles will eventually get taken over him. I believe Teddy Bridgewater will be taken over him. I think there's a chance that Derek Carr could be taken over him. So I could see him dropping to as far as four or as, you know, high as three in terms of quarterbacks off the board. So would it shock me if Manziel was there at 12? I mean, let me put it this way. Do I think Johnny Manziel was one of the 12 most talented people in the draft? No, I do not. But do I believe teams' needs for quarterbacks are so high in those first 12 picks that he will be off the board when the Giants go at 12? Yes. And I'm not sure there's anybody that picks after the Giants that have that big of a need for a quarterback where they would want to trade up to get a guy like Manziel. So I'd have to look at the draft order. I can bring it up right here. But let me see here. Let me look at the quarterback.
Talk about running trickery plays there. You could really run it with him bringing him in on third down and that, but I don't think Mr. Coughlin would ever go for that.
Oh, the Giants drafting Johnny Manziel? There is no chance in hell that's happening.
Yeah, whatever. But he would be great to have on the bench there if Eli would ever get hurt, boy, to shake him up. You know what I mean? Defense is how they'd have to prepare for both or bringing him in on third down or something like that.
I hear you, but you can't use a first-round pick on a player like that. And once you start subbing quarterbacks in and out, this isn't college. You're only going to get yourself into trouble. I appreciate the creativity, but I don't see that happening.
I was just wondering what you thought he was worth there, because I don't think they'd ever go for that. Coughlin would it anyway. Hey, I have one more comment there.
Sure.
The other day there when you had that guest on, I was really surprised when he said JPP rated so high, especially against the run.
2 years ago he said, not this past season, but he said two years ago he rated really well against the run, which frankly I was surprised to hear too, Joe.
Yeah, I said, now I don't know how much he got double teamed or anything like that last year. Do you know, did he get double teamed a lot last year?
No, honestly, JPP probably saw fewer double teams last year than he had in the previous 2 years of his career. I saw Justin Tuck get double teamed more than Jason Pierre-Paul did.
Right. Well, then, JPP, hopefully it's a year off that injury, and he's got to pick it up for sure, you know.
Giants need him. Giants need him to be a big-time player again.
Right, if he's going to get the bigger contract. That's all. Great show. Thank you.
Hey, bye-bye. Thank you, Joe. And just let's say Manziel gets to 12. First of all, I don't think that's going to happen because here are the teams picking ahead of the Giants at 12 that need quarterbacks. Houston Texans. You can argue St. Louis Rams, though I still think Bradford's a pretty good quarterback. Jacksonville Jaguars certainly need a quarterback. Cleveland Browns certainly need a quarterback. So you look at it, I'll take St. Louis out of that. You're looking at three teams with nothing there. Oakland needs a quarterback, that's four. Vikings need a quarterback, that's five. Is Tampa happy with Mike Glennon? Eh. Is Tennessee happy with Jake Locker? Eh. So you're looking at five to as many as six or seven teams that could use a quarterback picking in the top 12. I don't think Manziel's getting to 12. And frankly, do you think Derek Carr could sneak into that top 12 too if a team really needs a quarterback? Or will that be a deal in the late teens, a team with a big second-round pick might trade up into the middle of the first round to get Derek Carr? It's a good question. I don't know. 201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Now, I knew Len would be the guy that would remember the last trick play the Giants ran in the regular season.
Oh, man, you know, Dan asked me that when I got on the phone. It's tough to find one, but it does help me try to make a point, John, if I might hear.
No, I'm sorry, Len. You can't make any points during this phone call.
The reason why offensive playbooks are so big in the NFL is because everybody's got the same plays in them, John. The question becomes, when are you going to call those plays? And that depends on, you know, the philosophy of the team, the offensive coordinator calling the plays, and most importantly, what names are next to the X's and O's on the, you know, in the book? I mean, we have as many options on quarterback sneaks for Eli, I believe this, as anybody else, but we're not going to call it.
Right, 100%. Yeah. I agree. It's in the playbook. The plays just don't get called.
Every one of those. Listen, we've got fake extra points in the playbook, John. We've got onside kicks. It's who's running the plays and who's calling the plays that makes the difference in the end. Second point, and it's not related to the Giants. All we need to know about the Knicks, John, is that Andre Drummond had 26 rebounds.
You know, the funny thing is, it seems like every game a player decides, all right, this is the game I'm going to get my career high. You had the Scott kid do it for the Hawks a couple weeks ago. And it's not even – look, Andre Drummond's a good rebound, a good defensive player. I get that. I'm not taking anything away from him. But the Knicks have let so many scrubs have the games of their lives over the course of this season. It's disgraceful.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced of this totally, but I'm leaning in this direction, John. My 9-year-old granddaughter can play better perimeter defense than anybody on the Knicks.
I think I could put anybody in this building and they play better perimeter defense than Ray Felton and J.R. Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr.
God.
It's a disaster.
Listen, point on the linebackers. You were talking about the linebackers before, and Rivers' name didn't come up. And I'm bringing him up for a couple of reasons. He falls into that 4 to 8 year category in terms of, you know, being a veteran, etc. And I like when the bulk of the team is 4 to 8 year veterans. This guy knows the system, he's played, we've got needs in other places. You know, if you draft Mosley, okay, we got to rethink this. But I would re-sign Rivers. I think we can get through the year with Beeson in the middle, Paysinger and Williams on the one side, split in time. And of course, you're going to take Rivers off the field on third down anyway. There's no, you know, you don't have to have a three down linebacker at that position.
Len, Rivers is your backup option there. To me, I think you try to get better than him if you can. But if all else fails, you run out of money and there's no one else you can bring in. If he's your oh crap, we need somebody to play Sam guy, I'll live with that. But I want somebody better.
John, I do too. But we're going to run out of money.
Well, that could be true.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question about decision making. When push comes to shove within the decision making process with the Giants.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that first pick. We're in the draft room. We've got everybody there. 2 minutes left on the clock. We got some disagreement of who the pick should be in the room. Who makes the final decision?
You know,
let's talk about the first pick. First pick.
You'd be surprised. You know who makes that final decision?
Mr. Mara.
Paul DeTino. No, I'm just kidding. Jerry Reese is the guy that pulls the ultimate trigger in situations like that. Everyone will make their case. Mark Ross will make his case, and I think he probably would have the loudest voice in the room because that's his job. He's the director of college scouting. But I think Jerry, in the end, would be the guy that says, all right, we're going to go with the college scouts. And frankly, I think what usually happens is that Jerry will agree with Mark Ross. Mark Ross has the job that Jerry Reese used to have.
These are the guys
that look at college players all year long. So Jerry makes the ultimate decision. I would probably gather that he would more often than not go with whatever draft board the college scouts have put together.
Well, he most likely, well, he has the authority to do that, but I think we know by now that Jerry is going to lean toward whatever he comes out of scouting, so he's going to lean toward what the scouts tell him. But that's on the first pick. So what you're telling me is that on the first pick in the draft, number 12, the owners defer. I'm not talking about 2 through 7 now. Just that first pick, the owners defer to Jerry. And if there's a disagreement with the owners about what Jerry's thinking, what do they do?
I don't think Mr. Mara is engaged to the point where he's sitting there and has a strong enough opinion where he's going to express it, where he likes one player over the other. Now, Chris Mara is a different story. Chris Mara is a guy who grew up and, he ran a scouting, company for a long time. So what he does is personnel. So I'm sure he has an opinion, but I'm sure his opinion also gets incorporated into how they set up the draft board.
Okay. I'm more curious than I am suggesting that something should happen. Can we go to coaching decisions for a second? I mean, who the head coach is going to be? Either hiring a head coach, extending a head coach, or firing a head coach? Who do you think has final? Again, I'm more curious than I'm suggesting anything here. But what Jerry recommends to Mr. Mara and he makes the decision?
That would be my feeling on how it happens. Yes, I believe the coaches and who I would say the head coach is ultimately decided on by ownership. And as everyone well knows the story, Ernie Accorsi did not want to hire Tom Coughlin. Wellington Mara wanted to hire Tom Coughlin. That's how he got here. So ownership would want to pick the guy that's the face of the sideline in the head coach.
Okay, good point. Now, how about when it comes to, week-to-week planning, I take it that's all Tom's job, huh?
Correct.
Frankly,
I think a lot of the game planning is done by the coordinators with help from the position coaches, and Tom oversees it.
All right, so it's left to the coaches to do that.
Correct.
Who plays is left up to the coaches.
That's 100% correct, and so is the 53-man roster on game day.
On game day.
The 47-man roster.
The 46.
Yeah, the 46 on game day.
47 man roster on game day. I was just curious about how the decision-making process operates within the Giants. And again, I'm not suggesting that it's wrong. It seems like that's the way it should be, and that people shouldn't get too involved if it's not their job. I mean, if you're going to overrule Jerry, you shouldn't have Jerry. You got to go get somebody else to be your general manager. I mean, all those questions you had before, John, where you were saying, is Luan at tackle and Pugh at guard better than another combination of players? We may not know, John, but by God, I hope Jerry knows. I hope Jerry knows what
question. Well, Len, and the funny thing is that I'm sitting here going back and forth with the Farmer Brothers on Twitter. And look, do I think Luan would be better than William Beattie was last year? Sure. But is Luan going to be better than the William Beattie of 2012? I don't know if that's the case.
Well, you would hope that the general managers got a better idea than we do about that answer and can steer us in the right direction. And I think he will. I mean, I've got faith in what he does. I keep looking at all the holes, though. Man, we got a lot of holes, John. And sometimes you just got to sit tight. Maybe it's tight end, and you say to yourself, "Come on, Robinson, show us what you got." Or maybe it's at linebacker, and you say, "Come on, Rivers, give us one more year, and get Beeson back." You hope you can get. I didn't mention Brown yesterday, the defensive back. You know, hopefully he comes back and, you know, can give us something at safety. Although we're really in pretty good shape. If Cooper Taylor stays healthy and Hill stays out of trouble, we're probably in pretty good shape at safety. But it would be nice to see Brown back and given a chance to get a job. And one last idea. You know, it's interesting. I know the franchise numbers probably give us an idea of the worth of a position to a team in the NFL. Wide receiver to safety, for example. I mean, the wide receiver franchise tag is going to be a lot higher than the safety franchise tag.
Correct.
But it's amazing to me that now maybe it's because they got all this money to spend, but it's amazing to me that a guy like Macklin, a wide receiver, coming off ACL, gets the kind of deal he got. When we can't get Brown on the contract yet, who's coming off an ACL? Now, I know, you know, what do we know that precludes us from already having signed Brown?
That's a good question, Len. I don't have a good answer for you. I got to be honest with you.
I don't know. You know, sometimes as a fan, you get frustrated with the way things go. But again, I trust Jerry. He knows what he's doing. And we just have to remember, in the end, I have to keep reminding myself, John, in the end, we were 7-9. We were 7-9.
That's a lot of changes are coming down the road, Len. Appreciate the call, bud.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. 201-939-4513. That Macklin deal, by the way, $3.5 million guaranteed this year. Can go up to as much as $6 with some of those incentives. And I think that's a good deal for Macklin. You know, he makes a nice chunk of change guaranteed this year. You know, $3.5 million is nothing to sneeze at. But in that offense, if he shows that he can be a really productive player, and by the way, look out next year. The Eagles can run out Riley Cooper, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Macklin, Brent Celek, Tyler Eifert. Whew! Oh, and by the way, LeSean McCoy. Let's not forget him. And Nick Foles, who obviously is an improving young quarterback. So, look out for that offense next year, folks. Look out. Defense, another story. Offense, whew. It's a lot easier for Foles to come along slowly when you have a great running game and you have weapons around him like that. It really is. And one other point that, you know, Nick and Mike Farmer on Twitter are making to me as we kind of go back and forth here on these potential Giants draft picks and, you know, moving around the offensive line, and it was Nick that made the point. He's right. And I probably misspoke earlier when I used the words. When I say, do I know that, you know, Lawan and Pugh inside is better than Pugh and Yankee inside? No, I don't know. And, you know, Len said, I hope Jerry knows. Well, you know what, Len? I hate to burst your bubble. Nobody knows. And this is what Nick Farmer said on Twitter, and he's right. The draft is nothing more than an educated crapshoot. You're betting on young men who have never played at this level, who you have no idea how they're going to react to making $1 million a season, moving away from everything that they've known, starting a career, being adults. You need to stay healthy. How do you predict that? I mean, it's a lot of guesswork. It's a ton of guesswork. You just make the decision that you think have the highest probability of working out because nothing's 100%. I just want to go back to 1998. When there were 15 NFL general managers that thought Ryan Leaf would be a better NFL quarterback than Peyton Manning. That's insane. It's insane. So any system, any process that can rate Ryan Leaf higher than Peyton Manning is an inexact science at best. And to call it a science is even a little bit crazier. It's luck. Tom Brady got drafted in the 6th freaking round. Tony Romo went undrafted. These guys are top 10 quarterbacks. Christian Ponder was a first round pick. Tom Brady got picked at the end of the draft. I mean, folks, just go through the first round. 2 or 3 years ago, you'll find guys on the list that you've never heard of. Has they even done a damn thing in this league? A damn thing. I know we talk about the stuff like, you know, all these ratings and Kuiper and McShay and Scouts Inc. and Rob Rang and all these ratings and these scouting reports. We know what these guys are going to be. Oh, he's going to be a good receiver, can't block, but da 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 da. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Cover your head, cover your eyes with your fingers, roll the dice, and you hope for the best. You pick the guy that, according to what you know and your experts and your expertise and your scouting, that you think has the best chance of succeeding, but there are no guarantees. And some teams are better at it than others. There are scouts that are better than others. There are general managers and directors of college scouting that are better than others. There is a skill to it. But it's luck, too. Was there any way to know that Kenny Phillips would blow out his knee and then, you know, turn into a bust? No. Terrell Thomas, multiple ACLs. Could you have predicted that? Of course not. Clint Simpson never got on the field. He kept blowing his knee out. Can't predict that. 201-939-4513. I was going to throw in a Ramsey's Barton joke there, but I couldn't think of a good height reference, besides the fact you can't teach it. Let's go back to our phones and go to Ethan in Maryland. Ethan, what's going on, pal?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ethan. What's up?
So I've just been noticing this over the past couple weeks. You know, there's teams like the Philadelphia Eagles. They get everything done they need to get done. So, you know, you sign Cooper to a five-year deal. You sign Macklin to a one-year deal. You extend Peters and Kelsey. You know, you do that. And then you look at the Giants, and all they've done since the season ended is extend Tom Coughlin 1 year. You know, it just kind of drives me crazy in a way, knowing that we have so many free agents like Terrell Thomas, Andre Brown, Stevie Brown, John Beeson, and, you know, we haven't really made an effort to go out and give him a contract.
Well, I think they are making an effort to give Beeson a contract, but I think what the problem you run into here, Ethan, is that, you know, not to say the Eagles don't have any holes, but I think the Eagles, especially offensively, have far fewer holes to fill than the Giants. So they can use their cap space, they can use their resources to re-sign their own players, because I think they're pretty secure with what they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and that's where they've made most of their moves, keeping that group together. The Giants are in a different situation. They're in a different situation where you're going to need 15 new players coming in here in free agency trying to get this team better. I think the Eagles believe if they play next year the way they played the final eight games of last year, they'll win 10, 11 games and run away with the NFC East. So they can use their resources to simply bring their own guys back, while the Giants, frankly, have to undergo a lot of change this offseason.
But the thing is, you know, one of the biggest things the Giants need to do this offseason, in my opinion, is extend Antrell Roll. And they have not made an effort to go out and say, hey, can we extend you maybe 3-4 years, lower your cap, you know, et cetera, to, you know, push that cap room up. Even with Chris Knee and David Boss, they went out and said, hey, take a pay cut. You know, everyone thought, oh, they're gone next season. That's what I just don't get. They're so reluctant to hold on to them. And it just, you know, but I don't know. I get Snead's a great player, but I don't think they should hold on to Boss. I think there's plenty of, you know, Evan Dietrich Smith from Green Bay is a better guy than David Boss to play center. That's my opinion.
Well, look, Ethan, I don't think that they're going to go into next season with a starting spot designated for either Boss or Snead. I think they're going to have to earn it. I think they'll go into the season with those guys fighting for roster spots. And I agree with you. I don't know why they haven't worked on a role extension. I would have been doing that. But, look, they're going to make changes. And I know the Giants sometimes don't go with the pace as some other teams do. And that's a constant irritant to Giant fans out there. But their results in the past have, for the most part, been positive. So I'm going to be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt here. But I understand where you're coming from. And like I said at the start of the show, I would have liked to have seen at least something get done by now. And they only have, you know, four and a half days left to the start of free agency when you can start negotiating with other players and other teams. And I'd like to see the Giants at least have their cap number in order before that time comes.
And another thing, though, you know, I'm just thinking about is, you know, when you have teams such as the Giants, and you know, you have all these holes to fill. And, like, we saw it last year. You know, they let Chris Canty, Ahmad Bradshaw go, and Michael Boley as well. The thing was, Jerry Reese thought he could replace these guys with, you know, one-year deals, you know, $750,000 contracts.
And he
was
wrong.
Ryan Mundy.
He was wrong.
Exactly. You know, like Ryan Mundy, okay, he was a good player. Lewis Murphy, I think he only had like 3 catches on the year. You know, for example, these players, you can't fill these big gaps such as Ahmad Bradshaw and Chris Canty with them. And, you know, at press conference at the scouting combine, he said, hopefully there's guys in the second or third wave of free agency. We don't need that. We need to be, you know, go out there and get a guy like, you know, Zane Beatles or John Osmoa from Kansas City. We just can't sit back and wait for a guy like, oh, I don't know, you know, some backup running back from Carolina or something. We don't need that. We need guys who come in and make an impact. We can't just sit back and wait for those guys to come to us.
Well, Ethan, I hear you, and I don't disagree to a certain extent, but remember, you are going to have to fill out a big part of this roster with those second and third tier free agents simply because of the salary cap. You can't just bring in 4 top tier guys. You're going to run out of money.
Right, but I mean, like, you know, the last year we went out and actually got a big free agent name, as I can remember. You know, 2008 we got Canty, Bernard, and Boley, and in 2009 we got Roll. So I don't remember.
Do you count Martellus Bennett?
No, because he was a minimum 1-year deal. And he was a backup in Dallas. So that's what I'm saying. You know, sometimes there are good luck with these guys. They come in, you know, in the second or third waves of free agency, and they turn out to be a star. You know, Bennett gets a 4-year, $20 million deal with Chicago.
Right.
So obviously things worked out for him. But, you know, there's guys like Lewis Murphy. That did not work out. We let Hickson go. I remember just seeing Hickson catch the game-winning touchdown pass against New Orleans in Carolina this year. I remember we let him go. And we replaced him with Lewis Murphy. So, you know, it just kind of drives me crazy. But, you know, I do believe Reese is a very good GM. You know, I've been hearing lately, you know, we look back at his draft classes. Half the guys are out of the league. Some of them are backups. You know, maybe one-third are starters and actually good players. But, you know, I think he's got to change his style of how he approaches free agency in the draft, because we have the 12th pick, and this draft is loaded. And I agree, you know, Taylor Lewin, it's better to have him in a Pew or Yankee. But I think they can get, you know, Coney Ealy in the first round, and then they can wait to the second or third round to get David Yankee or Dave Jackson, a solid guard. But, you know, knowing the Giants, I think they're just going to go for the best player available. And I think if Reese thinks that's an offensive lineman, I really would not want to see a tackle drafted in the first round. I would rather have Mike Evans or Coney Ealy, guys who we know can make a difference right away. Because to me, Reuben Randall is not a starter this year. I don't see it.
Well, I would look, and I've talked about it before, and Ethan, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Have a good one, bud. Thank you. Look, I think you can look at Justin Gilbert and need a cornerback. I think you can look at Mike Evans and wide receiver, though a lot of people are saying Evans has gone to top 10 now. I've seen that in a bunch of mock drafts. I think Ebron's a guy you can look at. If either Mack or Barr drop, I think there you can look at those guys. C.J. Mosley's an option. I mean, I think all those guys are guys that you can look at. And I agree. I don't think it's necessary to draft an offensive tackle in that first round, because you can get a starting quality guard in round 2, and the best guard in the draft, theoretically. That can be just as good as guard as Lawan could be a tackle. That's my point with the whole not picking a tackle in the first round. If the Giants had a huge hole at tackle, let's say William Beattie had not just broken his leg last year, but tore 3 knee ligaments and he was out for the year. All right? If you want to come and tell me then that, yeah, I want to use my first-round pick on a tackle and he's going to be my franchise tackle for 7-8 years because, you know, who knows what the hell Beattie's going to be, I'd be on board for that. I'd be, okay, let's do it. I'm in. Let's roll. But the Giants don't have a hole at tackle. So when you have a hole at guard and you know someone like Pugh is already an excellent tackle, why use a first-round pick on the best tackle when you can use a second-round pick on the best guard? And they're both going to give you the same production. Why spend a higher pick on a position that is higher value when you don't have to? So look how free agency works, folks. Tackles naturally get paid a lot more than guards. The Giants are lucky. They got a starting tackle with a late first-round pick in a weak draft that they're going to be paying virtually no money to for the next 3 years. That's great. That's a bonus. Why go out there and spend a first-round pick on a tackle? You don't have to. That's my point. 201-939-4513. Frank is in Tampa. Frank, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Good, John. How you doing?
What's up, Frank?
How you doing, John? I was trying to get in yesterday. I didn't get a chance, and so actually a couple things I wanted to talk about were briefly addressed today, but I do have three or four things. Some of them were discussed a little that I wanted to kick around, and if you would. And one of them, you know, I don't think it's as far-fetched as it might seem that one of those top three, and I would most definitely, I think, the fourth of those quarterbacks could fall. And the reasons are varied. You know, first of all, there's some new regimes in, and so teams are, you know, and new people coming in are reluctant to, you know, pick somebody who is going to be or supposed to be the face of the franchise for the next 10 years. If you screw that up, you know, you're in big trouble. And the
that's true.
And none of these guys are really slam dunks if you look at them. And so if you look at these teams and you start going through them and you say, okay, they need a quarterback, they don't have they've got new regimes in, and then the guys who are quarterbacks, strangely enough, in this draft appear to be slam dunks, you know, the tackles, the cornerbacks, et cetera. So, you know, I can envision scenarios whereby teams go, you know what, we just can't do it, we can't do it, and no one's going to be able to, you know, really criticize them if they
get. Well, Frank, how many really quarterbacks do you think are going to go in the top 10?
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't know, and that's because of all these variables. So what I'm wondering is if I can really foresee a situation where one of them falls to the Giants. So my question is a couple things. Number one, do the Giants ever or could they ever because I could see a team below wanting to move up. I also could see one of these teams above saying, look, we need to get a stud player in these, you know, in our top 10 pick here or whatever, but be willing to package some picks so that they could get that 12th pick, maybe give up, you know, a second, a couple of thirds.
Well, you know, Frank, I was looking at it. In terms of the teams picking after the Giants, just for examples, mm-hmm. I mean, there aren't many teams that need quarterbacks. I mean, you got the Rams, the Bears, the Steelers, Dallas, Baltimore. I mean, maybe the Jets would want to trade up for a quarterback, but I think they're willing to give Geno Smith one more year there. The Dolphins are very happy with Tannehill. Arizona, I mean, maybe they'd want to get a young quarterback, but I think they're pretty happy with Carson Palmer. Then you got the Packers, Eagles, Chiefs, Bengals, Chargers, you know,
Buffalo.
Saints. I just don't think any of these teams that pick after the Giants, in the first round at least, would be willing to trade up. And if I'm the Giants, I don't go down and trade into the second round. I think you have to maintain a top 17, 18 pick here so you get one of those top-tier talented guys.
Okay, yeah, because I was thinking more of one of the top 10 teams being afraid to make that pick, but then be willing to package players, possibly with picks, to get that 12th as well. You know, so that they could get the quarterback, but they wouldn't have to. But they'd also get that stud player in the top 10. And my question, though, John, is do you know, say, for instance, you know, there was a scenario here whereby one of these teams was very, very interested in doing that. Is there any way that a deal like that can be contemplated and assured before the draft? In other words, can any type of contract be signed to say, okay, to the Giants, if that pick is available, they have to take it?
You mean in terms of trading up or trading down you're talking about?
Right. If, say, a team says, okay, if Manziel is available at 12, we want it, we're willing to give you X player and X picks to the Giants, is there anything obligating the Giants or the other team if something, you know, happens as the day goes on and they go, whoa, wait a minute, we can pick this guy?
I believe that's only a verbal agreement. I don't think you can sign anything that says if somebody's there, if somebody's not there. Now, you could trade whatever draft pick you want whenever you want. So if the Giants, you know, talk to St. Louis, who wants to trade down from number 2, and St. Louis, you know, they could trade the number 2 pick. The Giants have to trade next year's 1, this year's 1 and 2. You can make that deal now. But, you know, St. Louis can't say, well, we're only going to make that pick if, you know, Clowney's not on the board. That you can't do.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, and also yesterday when I was wondering, because the one thing that hasn't really been discussed is the Sam, and so that happened to come up also. That's a position where they're not on the field much, but when, so you don't want to spend a lot of money or anything, but when you need them, you really need them, whether it's goal line or short yardage or whatever, so you can't skimp. But on the other hand, you don't want to spend. And I think, Rivers for a cheap price is, okay there. But what about a guy who's on the roster? Can't Kiwi play that position? And then we've got guys that can move in on the line in that circumstance. And that way not having to, invest money or a draft pick or whatever.
I'll be interested to see how the Giants handle Kiwanuka this year, because a lot of people have said that, look, he was, a lot of people thought he'd be a lot better once he got moved back to defensive end full time, and that didn't happen. So I'd be curious to see how they handle Kiwanuka this year. I mean, would I say move back to linebacker in certain packages is impossible? No. I'd still consider it unlikely, I think. But I think that'll be an interesting conversation that'll happen with the coaches about Kiwi. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Frank.
Oh, John?
Yes.
Oh, and also one thing, just quickly, yesterday you were talking about Tate. Can he catch? Because I know I heard McAdoo talking about the screen going to be emphasized. Do you happen to know if he can catch? And the other thing I wanted to ask is, when I was asking the other day, and you said, no, the players, they never have them run their 40s after that, I was shocked to see that Hillis ran a 4.6 at his size at the combine, and he hasn't been injured. He's not old. So, I'm just wondering where that speed went. It's amazing how many guys he ran faster than, household names. And I was just wondering, so can Tate catch, because we don't want to go through that again. And also, were you surprised to see Hillis could run that fast? And thanks a lot, John.
I appreciate it. I didn't realize Hillis ran a 4.6 to combine. I guess when he gets going in a straight line, he could probably pick up speed pretty quickly. The problem is that side to side wise, he is very little shiftiness. In terms of Ben Tate, 13 catches and 19 targets his rookie year, 11 catches and 11 targets his second year, and then 34 catches and 51 targets year number three. I forget who called up. They told me they thought Tate had a bunch of drops last year on balls out of the backfield. I got to be honest, Frank, I'm not crazy familiar. I'd have to do some research on that. 201-939-4513. We lost Jake in Corning, so let's go to our final call on the show, which is Dean up in Connecticut. Dean, what's going on?
What's going on, John? How you doing?
What's going on, Dean? How are you?
Not bad. I just had a couple things to chime in on, and I'm going to hang up and listen to you if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, first, what you were just talking about before the last caller about why wasting a first-round pick on a premier tackle when you could take a premier guard in the second round.
Right.
I see where you're going with that, but I've always been pondering this situation. If they really feel that BD is going to come off this injury healthy, then why not move him to right tackle, Pugh to right guard, and shore up one side of that offensive line and draft a top tackle in the first round, and we could start from there. And another thing is, I just saw that Cleveland just slapped a transition tag on Alex Mack.
That's correct.
Do you think that's going to hinder the Giants as far as going after him as well?
I think it'll make it all but impossible for the Giants to go after him. To be quite honest with you, I think the price tag is going to be way, way too high. And Cleveland decided they don't want to lose one of their best players. I get it. And the Giants will have to move on. And look, you can find a very good center that's going to make a lot less money than Alex Mack, so I don't think it's necessarily a disaster. You like to have all your options on the table, obviously, but I think the Giants will still be fine. You can bring in a guy like Dietrich Smith, a guy like De La Puente that can play center, and you'll be okay in that spot.
I was thinking about even Swanson in the later rounds, too.
I honestly don't know much about him. I will have to take a look at him, but I think you can look for some depth, late in the draft in the offensive line, but I wouldn't trust anybody picked after round 4 or 5 to start for you.
Yeah, and my last thing, a lot of the mocks have Taylor Lewan slipping to us.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. What if Anthony Barr does slip to us? Imagine him if we do sign decent on the outside with his pass rushing ability. I mean, that could be a home run right there.
Well, I think Barr or Mack, if they fall to 12, they're very talented. I think you could take a look at either one of those guys at 12 if they're there. Right now, I've seen Khalil Mack go as high as, 4 or 5 in recent drafts, Barr around 8 or 9. So, would I be shocked if Barr was there at 12? No. Would I be surprised? Probably a little bit. But I think that's somebody the Giants would have to look at if he's there. Remember, though, he was also a 3-4 linebacker in college playing outside. So that would be a bit of a transition going into the NFL.
But all right, John. Well, thanks for your help, man. Go Giants.
Hey, thanks, Dean. Appreciate the call, buddy. Call back anytime. Everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter, online. I tried to answer as many of your questions and comments on Twitter, and I tried to bring up as many as I could over the course of the program. Let's take a look, see if there's anything recent here. Let's see what we got here. Anthony and Phoenix getting frustrated at people bringing up quarterbacks for the Giants. Mike Farmer, Beattie had worst year of his career right after signing a big deal. Also talked about needing to rework his technique. How can he be so confident when all signs he gave us last year are heading towards the downside? Mike, I'm not crazy confident. I don't know that Beattie's going to come back and be a monster next year, but I think you have to give him a chance. And I don't think you're in the position where you can punt on him yet. I think you got to give him this year to work it out. And look, if you get into next season and then you say, look, Beattie gave us another bad year, then you can make a move on a tackle. And again, you know, if something crazy and Matthews or Greg Robinson fall to you 12 and, you know, these guys are considered on a different level than Lawan and they're considered, you know, franchise left tackles, you know, I'd be more convinced that maybe you should pick one of those offensive linemen there. I could get on board with that. I just don't think Lawan is much of a sure thing as those other two guys. I mean, I think he's going to be a good player. And would I be devastated and say the Giants made a huge mistake if they picked a tackle in the first round? No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that at all. But again, let's see what they do in free agency first in terms of the offensive line. I'm just not sure. This is my biggest point, all right? And let me just summarize it, and I'll leave the show with this tomorrow because I think it's interesting. You know Pugh's a good right tackle, right? Do you know he's going to be as good as of a left guard or right guard as he is a right tackle? You don't know that. He could be worse. It's possible. Now he could be better too. I don't know. But you don't know that. It's an unknown element, okay? Now, so you might actually be hurting yourself in some ways by moving Pugh from right tackle to right or left guard. Now, do you know that Lawan is going to be better than Pugh was? Or let me rephrase that. Do you know Lawan in his rookie year is going to be better than Pugh in his second year at tackle? I don't know. I think it's a huge question mark. I think it's less likely than it is more likely. Do I know that Lawan in his first year at right tackle is going to be better than, just say, Yankee in his first year at guard? I don't know the answer to that question. Do you? I think it's a toss-up. So potentially using your first-round pick to downgrade yourself at guard and tackle. Now, it might not work out that way. It might work out better. But I don't know. I'd rather use that first-round pick on somebody where I can say, I know you're getting an upgrade here. Like, I know that if you draft Justin Gilbert, you're going to be better at corner. Do you know why? You got nobody else on the roster. Nobody else is on the team that can play that spot besides Hosley and Charles James. I know Gilbert's going to be an upgrade. And do I know that C.J. Mosley will be an upgraded linebacker? But I'm pretty sure that he's going to be an upgraded linebacker over Spencer Paysinger or Jaquan Williams. A seventh-round pick and an undrafted guy. I'm pretty darn sure that Mosley is going to be an upgrade. I'm pretty darn sure that Eric Ebron will be an upgrade over Adrian Robinson and the zero other tight ends on the roster. Now, my opinion on these might change based on free agency. Maybe the Giants bring in two veteran corners that I know can play. Maybe they bring in a tight end that I know can play. And then my idea might change. I just don't know you're necessarily getting better by drafting the tackle as opposed to drafting the best guard in the round two. I don't know if you're putting together a better line that way. You might, but you might not. Other guys, I know you're going to get better. Everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter. See you tomorrow morning, 9:30 on Giants.com. Everybody have a good one.